And welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so thrilled to be here with all of you today. I have a great show planned for you. My guest will be Amy Hamlin. She is the executive director for the Coalition of Healthy School Food, and they're doing some really great work in New York State and around the country, and we will be telling you more about them in just a little bit. But in the meantime, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the news, ways that you can take some action, and of course share with you my weekly recipe. So for starters, I want to just make sure everybody knows about the Women's March that is going to be happening across the nation, with the biggest march happening on October 17th in D.C. I am hoping to go down to Washington, D.C. I actually ordered my Handmaid's Tale costume, which I have a link on my website for everyone to order, but you can just go to Amazon. But I thought, you know, the more people we get out to wear the handmade costume, along with the pink hats from the last march, it would just be a beautiful wave of red capes out in the marching in the people. So anyway, I just thought that would be really fun. But this march is really serious. I mean, the Women's March, you know, right now they're coming together really to oppose the filling of the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's seat on the Supreme Court. But along with that, their principles have to do with ending violence, reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights, worker rights, civil rights, disability rights, immigrant rights, and of course, environmental and racial justice. And we need to hit the streets. And I know with COVID, it's really, you know, adds another layer of scariness to it. But put your mask on, try to keep your distance, and hit the streets. It's just really important, especially now before the election, anything we can do to try to keep them from filling the seats. You know, we can count our blessings that the president got COVID. However, you know, he has been really twisting the truth. Who knows what the truth is? And, you know, it seems like he's bounced back. But, you know, in my own little way, I'm kind of hoping he gets a relapse so that he can really kind of see COVID for what it is and not try to become macho about it and make out like COVID's no big deal and those that have fallen to the to COVID who have died from it, that, you know, they didn't handle it well or they weren't tough enough. That's kind of like the impression he's trying to give to the American public, as opposed to wear a mask and you know, be careful. That's just not really part of his MO. So anyway, I hope to see you in Washington, D.C. I don't know if there's going to be a march in New York City. When I went and searched, there were marches in and around the area, but not in Manhattan itself. So there is a link, again, on my website, or you can go to the Women's March. Just Google that, and it will come up, Women's March 2020. And there's a whole map there of where there's going to be marches. So you can either join a march that's already organized, or you can actually sign up to organize your own. And like I said, I also have a link on my website to order the Handmaid's costume if you're interested in that. I think it, you know, just sets a really great mood. Ways that you can take action. Oh, there's always so much, and I try to limit it in my weekly newsletter, which you can sign up for also on my website at ieatgreen.com. But this week, you know, I really tried to limit it, but one of the biggest things that came out to me this week was the desire for corporations to expand floating factory farms in our oceans. And these floating factory farms are just bad. I mean, you know, aquaculture in a small, sustainable way can work, you know, if you are doing it and creating fish waste that is fertilizing your own plants in your greenhouse. You know, that certainly has a place. But these factory farms are very different. than aquaculture in your small little organic farm. Factory farms are taking huge areas of the ocean and, you know, creating cages where they're going to raise fish, where they are raised in very crowded quarters, where they have to be given antibiotics to prevent them from getting disease because they're swimming in all this fish waste. They're given chemicals, and, you know, they're fed food that is not even food that fish are supposed to eat. I remember seeing a TED talk from Dan Barber where he talked about, you know, the fish pellets that they were feeding the fish was being made from the chicken scraps from factory farms where the chickens are eating, you know, all kinds of GMOs and pesticides. So it's just really bad. And then when those fish escape, and especially like the salmon, when the farm-raised salmon escape into the wild, they mate with wild salmon, and yet they're not viable. And so, you know, it just will decimate the whole wild fish population as well. It's just really a bad, bad situation. And yes, our oceans are being overfished. And just like with the consciousness around meat production, we need to all limit how much we eat of everything and eat a variety of things, because our planet just cannot sustain the amount of animal proteins that Americans want to eat. So we need to really work on that too. But anyway, please sign this petition to keep factory farms from moving into the oceans. It's just really, really important. Also, I want to ask you to sign this petition to get our Congress people to support a proposed bill that Senator Tom Udall and Representative Joe Neguse have proposed. It's called the Protect America's Children from Toxic Pesticides Act. And this would protect, you know, children and everybody from dangerous pesticides that are being sprayed all over our fields. It will also protect the farm workers. And it would also open a petition process that would empower anyone in the U.S. to ask the Environmental Protection Agency to review any pesticide that they have concerns about. Of course, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, is not really doing their job under the current administration. So that's a whole nother issue that we need to work on. But still, we need to move ahead and get this proposed bill into Congress and move through Congress. The more we can all take a part in our political process, the better our government will be, which means we need to all get out and vote. That's the first thing. It's just so important. So if you haven't registered, you still have a little time to register. So please, please register to vote if you haven't done so already. This is the most important election of our lifetime. And we just need to get everybody out there to vote. You can join calling banks to call people to get them to sign up to vote. You know, there's lots of groups that are having people write postcards or call unregistered voters to get them to vote, especially in the swing states where it's just so, so important. Also, I wanted to let you know that the TED organization, they're launching a global countdown, which I think you all want to be a part of. And this is going to take place live this Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 o'clock a.m. Pacific Time. And they have hundreds of people lined up to talk. It's supposed to be a great event. It will be live on TED's YouTube channel. And so check that out. It's called The Global Countdown. So you can Google that too and find out more about it. Of course, I have links on my website. And then the Real Organic Project, which I've talked to you all about before. I've had Dave Chapman, who's one of the founders of the Real Organic Project, on my show in the past. They just launched their new label. It's called the Real Organic Project. It's a beautiful blue circle. And the need for that is because our USDA organic label has really been weakened over the years. 3 years ago, there was a meeting in Jacksonville, Florida with the National Organic Standards Board. And during that meeting, the board sided more with big corporations than they did with our organic farmers. And they have weakened the standards of organic. And the Real Organic Project has almost 500 farms participating so far, with more and more coming on board. But it's really a label that you can trust. So look for the Real Organic Project and support those farmers, please. And then another really good thing, General Electric announced that they will no longer build any new coal plants anywhere in the world, which is a real, real great announcement, and we have the Natural Resource Defense Council to thank for that, along with other grassroots organizations who really worked hard to lobby GE to cancel their coal projects that they were planning on building. However, they still have not canceled ones that are already existing, and so there is still more work to be done. So please sign the petition that I have on my website and keep the pressure on GE to cancel the coal plants that they already have in the works. And now I want to share with you my weekly recipe before I invite Amy Hamlin on. This week I made a vegan tuna-ish salad. You know, since I've been vegan, you know, every once in a while I get a craving for something that I used to eat, like tuna salad. And this really, really satisfied the craving. So I used one can of garbanzo beans, and I rinsed them and drained them. Half a cup of apple that I diced, 2 tablespoons of chopped celery, 2 tablespoons of grated carrots, 2 tablespoons of diced red pepper, 1/4 cup of chopped pecans, 2 tablespoons of dill relish, 2 tablespoons of finely chopped red onion, 1 tablespoon of chopped fresh dill, 1 tablespoon of fresh parsley, 1 tablespoon of fresh lemon juice, 1 tablespoon of mustard, 1/4 cup of arame. And arame is a seaweed that you can buy in your local health food store. And you soak it in some boiling water, and that just reconstitutes it. And then you're going to chop that up and add that to this dish as well. 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon black pepper, and 2 tablespoons of vegan mayo. And so, like I said, you're going to soak the arame in some boiling water and just set that aside and let that reconstitute. Meanwhile, in a food processor, pulse the garbanzo beans until they're coarsely chopped. Transfer those to a medium bowl. Add the diced apple, the celery, the carrots, the red peppers, pecans, relish, red onion, dill, parsley, mustard, and the lemon juice, and mix that all up. Then drain the arame, squeeze out any of the excess water, and then chop that up really fine and add that to the bowl. Then add the vegan mayo, the salt and pepper, and stir that up. And that is it. Adjust the salt and pepper to taste. And it is just great. You know, put it on top of a half a whole wheat flagel or a sourdough bread, or just add it to your salad bowl, and it's really so satisfying. It has that crunch, and it's just delicious. And now it is my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest this week, Amy Hamlin. She is the director for the Coalition of Healthy School Food, and I invited her on to talk about the work they are doing. I was so impressed when the COVID first hit and schools closed. Amy had reached out to me. You know, they were partnering with many vegan restaurants in New York City to get vegan lunches for free to students. And it was just an amazing effort, and they just did some really, really great work. and they are in the schools in New York City and other parts of the country, and I'm going to just let Amy tell us more about the work they are doing. So, Amy, are you with me?
I'm here. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thanks for joining me. So I thought maybe we could just start with you telling my listeners a little bit more about the Coalition for Healthy School Food, what you do, how long ago you formed, et cetera.
Great, sure. Well, we're a nonprofit organization, and what we do is we introduce plant-based foods and nutrition education in schools to educate the whole school community about the health, environmental, and social justice issues of our food choices, which is so important. And we started in 2004. I was asked to write a New York State legislative resolution, which is not a law, but rather it's a recommendation. However, it's introduced and voted on the same way laws are voted on in New York State. So it goes through a committee, it gets approved, then it goes to the whole floor and gets voted on. And in 2004, this resolution asked that schools offer a vegan entree every day as a healthy choice, and that when they do nutrition education, that they include information about healthy plant-based eating and healthy multicultural eating. And it passed unanimously in 2004. And so after it passed, we decided that we needed to start a nonprofit organization that would implement the recommendations of the resolution. And so that's what we've been doing ever since.
And have you noticed, have schools complied to actually offer a vegan option every day?
Well, some have, but not all. I would say, again, it's not a matter of compliance because it's not an actual law. It's a recommendation. But I think over the years, yes, things have changed. Things have gotten easier. Certainly, most schools have peanut butter and jelly, and that is vegan, virtually almost always. And so really, we're talking about something beyond that, something more than just that. We've helped some schools transition to offering hummus every day, just like they offer peanut butter and jelly every day, as a healthy option. And so we got New York City schools to do that in all 1,700 of their schools. We got Ithaca, New York to do it. I know other schools have done it, and it's an easy thing to offer every day. But other kinds of recipes, we offer homemade, scratch-made recipes that schools can get on our website in quantity versions. There's also family-sized versions there. And these recipes are healthy recipes from around the world, so recipes from cultures around the world that are really delicious and healthy. They're either bean or lentil or tofu-based. And these recipes have been distributed to, I think, at this point, about 26,000 schools nationwide. That means they may be using them. We're not sure if they are, but they have at least been distributed to those schools.
Wow, that's impressive. You know, as you know, since last year, I was the farm-to-school coordinator at Glen Cove Public School, and I say was because as of right now, they have not called me back since after COVID. I keep, you know, writing to them, and I think they're just dealing with so many logistics with the COVID challenges that for them, bringing in the farm-to-school coordinator to bring fresh vegetables to the school kids is probably low on their totem pole, unfortunately. But I remember, when I was talking to students and trying to get a sense of, you know, what meals they liked, I can't tell you how many kids, their favorite thing was the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And in our school district, they don't even make that because of allergies. They don't even open the jars of peanut butter. They get these from Welch's grape jelly. They get pre-made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I think they come frozen. They defrost them. They're cellophane wrapped. And many kids, when I was asking them what people's favorite meals were, many kids said that was their favorite. And I could not believe it. I mean, it's like pre-wrapped in this cellophane, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with, you know, Welch's grape jelly. It's so horrible. So that's the vegan option that our school district has every day. And, you know, I'm happy that the kids like it, though, but it just, you know, it's such a turnoff to me to see that. So I think your recipes, you know, and if the schools are actually making them, that's just a wonderful thing. I remember I also implemented the Meatless Monday to the Glen Cove School District. And I come in and they're making a vegetable soup, but they didn't have any vegetable stock, so they used a chicken stock. And I'm like, that's not vegetarian. So it's really, it's just so, it's, we're climbing such a battle to get sometimes these lunch people to understand what vegetarian means or plant-based means. They just don't fully get it. So
it's true. We actually did, before COVID happened, a survey of food service directors in New York State who I just have to take a moment and pause and say they truly are heroes. They are a lot of times they're left out of when politicians are talking about essential workers and heroes during all of this. They had, since the very beginning, been preparing meals and providing free meals, often cases not just to the children but to the entire family. And while those meals weren't always ideal in terms of health, they were working under just unbelievable, scary circumstances and very stressful. And I have so much respect for the people who work in that field all the time. But now the stress that they're working under is just unbelievable. So, you know, I want to thank you for saying that
because I agree with you. You know, they really did come together, worked, you know, with masks on, you know, everybody in separate stations so that they could keep their distance. Yeah, I saw how they juggled. And it was, you know, really amazing going, you know, getting those meals out to kids and, like you said, to the families too. I mean, I know our school district started a food pantry immediately. And so they were not only giving food to the families, but they were giving food to, I mean, not only to the kids, but to the families. So
sometimes
thank you
entire
for
bags of groceries. I'm sorry. Sometimes entire bags of groceries would go to the families. And so, and not all school districts have this space for everybody to be 6 feet apart. And so, you know, it was just a really, and this was, you know, from the very beginning before we really knew anything. So how scary. But back to, we did this survey of food service directors about plant-based and were they serving plant-based foods. And some of them who said yes then went on to say the things that they were serving that were plant-based were chicken this and chicken that. And it was clear that the definition of plant-based needed to be much more clear. So we have our work to do for sure. But I feel like many schools are, at the request of students and parents, implementing or adding plant-based options. And right now in New York State, in the New York State Legislature, there is a bill. Don't ask me the bill number. I won't have it on the top of my head. But there is a bill that requests that schools offer a vegan entree upon request. So if a parent or a student requests that there be a vegan entree, they would have to provide that if this bill passes. And so if you go on to our website, healthyschoolfood.org, and click on Create Change and then Action Alerts under State, you will see this. It's there's also
good. Well, I hope that passes. I'll look at it and spread the word.
Great.
So how has your organization transitioned since COVID-19? Like I mentioned in my intro, I was so impressed how you were able to partner with vegan restaurants in New York City. But maybe you can share with my listeners other ways that you transitioned and adjusted to the COVID-19?
Yeah, that's a great point. Is we one of the first things we did was help match donated food to schools. And so one of those things was Ravi DeRossi, his group of restaurants. He has a number of restaurants in New York City, and interestingly, after he became vegan, he started the process of switching all his restaurants over to be vegan restaurants that didn't used to be vegan. So Mother of Pearl and some of his other restaurants were distributing free vegan meals to families in the neighborhoods where his restaurants were, which is really great. We also matched up with Gimme Snacks, which has the roasted seaweed snacks, and they had a lot, hundreds of thousands of individual snack packages to give away. We helped match those up with a number of school districts all over New York State. So when the kids were getting their grab-and-go meals in the summer, they had those as a special added treat. We were contacted by Beyond Meat, and they had truckloads of food to give away. So we helped match schools with food. None of that went to schools because it wasn't in a way that schools could deal with it, but we helped them find other places. And so for it to be donated. So that was the first thing we did. Then the second thing we did was we decided, even though normally we take the summer to catch up and get ready for the fall, we decided that now there weren't going to be summer camps, so we created a live virtual summer program with all kinds of classes. And now those classes, we're offering them right now. In fact, they just started this week, and I want to make sure people know about them. So these are classes for K-12 students, and this was true in the summer, but it's also true now. These classes on our website, healthyschoolfood.org, and just click on fall classes. You'll see them. They're all free, and they're different classes for different age groups, but we have exercise classes like hip-hop and health. We have fitness challenge, and we have fitness fun. All of these exercise classes include a nutrition component where students learn the basics about plant-based nutrition. We have cooking classes where the families cook at home, obviously, from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Of course, we do have people on the West Coast doing this as well and all over North America, but at least for the East Coasters, when they're finished making their meal at 6 o'clock, they have an entree for their family's dinner once they're done with our class. And that's been very popular. And we've got Southern cooking with Imani and Hearty cooking with Avis and International Flavors with Elisa. And these classes are really great classes and learning how to make all kinds of delicious plant-based entrees where it's also a parent is required to participate. Any age can participate, but it's more on the elementary school age. And so parents are required to participate with their child or children. And so not only does it provide the meal for the family, but it's this incredible experience of cooking together, which is such a great way to spend quality time together with your child. We also did classes on food and race because this is, you know, we've been focusing on racial issues not just since the summer, but for many years we started the hashtag Nonprofits for Black Lives years ago because we wanted nonprofits who were not focused specifically on racial issues to take a stand on this issue. And so there's that hashtag, Nonprofits for Black Lives, and we thought, well, let's make a class about food and race. And so we did that. And one of the high school girls who took the class this summer actually completely changed her life. It just really opened her eyes And she adopted a vegan diet, and just her eyes were opened up to the whole situation of how food and nutrition and health is all impacted by race. And so that is a really great class. And then we had food and the environment. And so, and then now in addition, we have a couple extra classes in the fall, which includes immune system tune-up. And that's being taught by a registered dietitian. The first one is actually tomorrow. And so if anybody's interested in these classes, just go. There's a link to click on to fill out a form to sign up, and it's all free.
Oh, that's wonderful. I was giving, when COVID first started, I was doing those Zoom classes also from 5 to 6 with the idea that, you know, I would send everybody the recipe ahead of time, and then you cook. And then, like you said, at 6 o'clock, you'd sit down to a family meal. And it was great when COVID first started and everybody was indoors, and then they kind of started to peter out, so I kind of stopped. And I think I'll probably start again in the winter when people have come back indoors. But it was great, you know. It's it was fun, and it was live, and it was interactive, and I really enjoyed doing it. So on my website also, there's under media, there is the live cooking classes, so you can put those out. So
I took one of those, and it was very fun. I really enjoyed it. One of yours.
Thank you. So how do people get involved to change the food in their local schools? I mean, I think most parents would agree that, you know, the school lunches are not what they wish they were. And I know over the years I've met with so many health and wellness committees and parents who are, you know, really disappointed in the school lunch programs and have tried to change it and have, you know, keep finding obstacles. Can you share with my listeners how can they get involved and how can they work to change the food in their local schools?
Yes. Well, I'm so excited that as of the end of last year, we created an all-new website. And one of the big changes with our website is we tried to put all the information that we're repeating a lot on the phone to people or in emails. And so on the website, healthyschoolfood.org, if you click on Create Change, the first option is In My School. And if you click on that, then it really tells you how to go about doing it. We can definitely talk to people and help them. I just want them to read this first before they contact me because it will answer a lot of their questions. But the first thing that is a big challenge for people is to understand how school food works. And then there's a link in the first section. There's a link to click on that. There's a whole long page about that. Because if you don't have an understanding of how school food works, it's very hard to advocate for changes because then what happens is people tend to ask for all kinds of changes that may not be possible, either because of the regulations on fat or salt or calories or because they are thinking about ingredients that are outside of the budget that a school really couldn't afford to do. So if you read this page about how school food works, how to create change in your school, which also includes how school food works, that'll help you understand how school food works. But then it also talks about a lot of other factors, like is the school a self-op or under contract management? That means are the employees of the school district or do they hire out a company? That makes a difference to know that. And being strategic about who you first contact in the district to help you change. So doing your homework to find out if the food service director is willing to work with a community member and make change. Or if they're not, then it might make sense to talk to the business superintendent or a school board member. So there's a lot of different There's a lot of different considerations. Another thing is some people complain about school food, but they never even looked at their school menu, only to find out maybe they do have some plant-based options. Maybe they do have a great farm-to-school program. So definitely making sure you know what the school is offering in the first place is important. And then, you know, another thing that I have seen happen a few times is where a person goes in there angry and complaining, and that is just not the way to create change. If you do that, you burn your bridges, and then everything grinds to a halt, because who wants to work with a person like that? So I think understanding that the food service director and the food service workers, they work so hard. They do care about and love the children. They believe they're doing the right things. It's about education. It's about working in partnership, you know, maybe not right now during COVID, but bring them food to try. You know, like, there's just, you have got to create a relationship. And so it's usually not an instant thing. It takes time to develop a relationship. It takes time to educate. On the other end, besides dealing directly with food service or upper-level administrators to try to advocate for change, is through the PTA, doing presentations, bring in plant-based doctors and dietitians to give talks about the health conditions that so many adults have, whether it's overweight or obesity, heart disease, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, all of these conditions, you know, so many of our parents have Alzheimer's or relatives, and the research is pretty clear. The more fruits and vegetables you eat when you're younger, the lower the chance that you'll get it, and the more cholesterol and saturated fat you eat, the greater the chance you'll get it, and cholesterol is only found in animal products, and animal products are also the primary source of saturated fat in the diet. So really, the worst diseases, many types of cancers, the worst diseases that we have that are impacting adults are very much diet-related, diet and lifestyle-related, and that means we can do a lot to prevent them, and that's why starting with young children is so important. There's a lot we can do to prevent them, and a lot of them, heart disease and type 2 diabetes, have been proven to be reversible with a whole food plant-based diet.
Yeah, so important. And like you said, I think it really starts with education, educating the community. You know, one person can't make the change by themselves, so you really have to kind of like grow the movement so that you're really coming to the school officials not just as one person but as a group of parents who are concerned. And that has a little bit more power, I think. Let's
totally
take a couple-minute break, Amy. When we come back, I want to talk. I would like you to share with my listeners how people can get involved, and also talk about your upcoming gala, etc. So, everyone, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green with my guest Amy Hamlin from the Coalition of Healthy School Food. Be right back.
Hi, I'm Gary Null, and I'm happy to be just one of the many voices speaking truth to power every day on the Progressive Radio Network. We have dozens and dozens of the finest minds in the United States, people who've spent their careers helping, first and foremost, bring justice to issues. Ralph Nader, Jimmy Dore, Gerald Salante, Eutrice Lee. From all communities, we look at what is the truth. We are not right. We are not left. We're not card-carrying members of any party. We may have been at one time, but today we're just looking to how we can cut through all of the nonsense. Occam's Razor, the philosophy of cut through it and get to the truth of it. And generally, it is the most direct and honest answers, and that's what we seek. Because progressivism is to seek the truth without having to first monitor with some ideological identity. No, the truth doesn't need an ideological identity. It just needs good spokespersons to bring it to you. And we have that at the Progressive Radio Network. We challenge Big Pharma. We challenge the big industries like Monsanto and DuPont. We challenge Wall Street and the banking community and the energy cartels, nuclear, high gas hydrofracking. We challenge all of them every day, 24/7. This is a place to come if you can handle the truth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest, Amy Hamlin, from the Coalition of for Healthy School Food. And she's the executive director, and she's going to talk to us about how you can get involved in this wonderful organization and also about their upcoming gala. So, Amy, you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. So how can people get involved with your organization? What are ways that they can participate and learn more?
Well, first of all, we welcome volunteers. And so there's a lot of ways they can get involved. First of all, they can get involved with working to change their own school, and we can help them do that. I was going to say right now during COVID-19, I think a really effective way is to get a doctor or dietitian to talk about immune system health. There's a website called plantbaseddoctors.org. So you can look up plant-based doctors there, maybe find if there's one anywhere near you. So setting up virtual education sessions for your school community is one way. And then directly helping us. We definitely seek volunteers, especially in the areas of PR and marketing, teachers and curriculum experts, fundraising, and board members. We are accepting new board members. There's a financial commitment associated with that, so just make sure people know that. But if they're interested, they can contact me to find out more.
Uh-huh. And you have an upcoming gala going on. And I know, you know, for the past, 10 years or so, I've been participating with you cooking food for your galas. And this year you're going virtual, so you want to share with our listeners how that's going to happen?
Yes. Well, actually, we're going to have an e-summit and gala. So it's called the Green Apple e-Summit Plus Gala, and the e-summit is going to feature about 20 speakers on 16 different topics focusing on kids, families, schools, and COVID-19. I mean, it's not all related to COVID-19, but there are some specific COVID-19 topics, and these are pre-recorded interviews that will air between October 24th and 27th. And then the gala, we've lost a lot of revenue because of canceled fundraising events. We're normally charity partners for the New York City Marathon, the New York City Half Marathon, the TD5 Row Bike Tour, and our spring benefit in Ithaca. All those were canceled, so that's about $40,000 of lost revenue, which we hope, because our gala does not have any geographic boundaries this year, that we hope we'll get a whole lot more people participating. And so the gala will be a live virtual event on Wednesday, October 28th. It'll be fun. We're going to have it gamified, so that means people can do various things while they're on the gala to earn points and win prizes. We'll have a silent auction, which actually just went live. So I want to encourage people to go to our silent auction right now and take a look. It's at 32auctions, the number 32, 32auctions.com/CHSF2020. The CHSF is our acronym, Coalition Healthy School Food. So 32auctions.com/CHSF2020. You can go there and you can start bidding right now. On the gala, we're going to have some special speakers. We're going to have Ayindi Howell, who is an actor and a chef and a cookbook author, as our host. We're going to be honoring Tony Hillary, who is the founder of Harlem Grown, which created urban gardens in Harlem and works in partnership with schools and has worked in partnership with us. We'll also be honoring Rebecca Amos, who was one of the founders of the Muse School in California. That was an all-vegan school that was very focused on the environment. So we'll be honoring them, and we'll have a number of special guest speakers. And then we're going to have people break up into rooms, smaller rooms, so they can actually meet other people and socialize, which will be fun.
Nice.
So again, that's on the 28th.
So the coalition used to be called the New York Coalition for Healthy School Food, and then you dropped the New York because you became more national. Are you working nationally right now? Are you in, you know, all the different states, or where are you, do you predominantly work?
We do predominantly work in New York State. However, we help schools all over the country. I mean, we have ongoing formal partnerships with New York City and Ithaca. We also work with three different rural school districts in New York State, and those are sort of ongoing relationships. But in addition, we help schools all over the country. Schools all over the country use our recipes and our resources. We get calls from schools and families. The California Department of Education, I mean, this was several years ago, but the California Department of Education contacted us and asked if they could share all of our recipes with all of their schools. Of course, we said yes.
Nice.
So we're here to help anyone, and we are not just New York focused. We are New York based, but we're not just New York focused. I wanted to say about the summit and the gala. So the website is greenapplesummit.org. Again, that's greenapplesummit.org. So people can go there to sign up for the summit and the gala.
Can you get to that from your website, too?
Yes, you can.
That's great.
Go to our event page.
Okay.
Then
I will make sure people know that. And who are some of the people that are going to be speaking during the summit?
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a great question. I am really excited about that. Speaking at the summit, we are going to have Eric Adams, the Brooklyn Borough President, talk about changing school food and education through policy. Also changing about how he reversed his type 2 diabetes. We're going to have Marisa Miller, filmmaker of the movie Veducated, talk about her brand new book, The Veducated Family Table. We're going to have Tracy McWhorter talk about her 10,000 Black Vegan Women, which just launched and people can still join. We are going to have Patricia Devaney talk about how she reversed her type 2 diabetes and transitioned her entire family to plants. We're going to have Dr. Kira Lawton, a pediatrician, talk about social and emotional health during COVID-19. Milton Mills, MD, talk about meat, dairy, and racism. Colin Campbell, PhD, talk about food policy and the food industry. We are going to have some people talking about strategies for schooling and working from home, and another topic to school or not to school in the age of COVID. I'll be talking about changing your school's menus. And one of the really special talks that we're going to be having is Principals of Vegetarian Schools Speak Out. And that's two of the principals of two of the vegetarian schools in New York City, who took time out of their incredibly crazy busy schedules to talk with us. And so those are just some. We've got plant-based eating on a budget, Michael Greger talking about how to survive a pandemic, all kinds of great topics. Ted Barnett, MD, talk about Jumpstart Your Health, and he has a program, a 15-day Jumpstart program, medically supervised, and that's really great. That also gives emotional support. So there's just so many great topics that we'll have.
And did you say the summit is free, correct?
The summit, like all summits, it's free to watch. And then you can buy a package. Like, you have to watch each day of the summit. There will be four different presentations. And so you can watch those four presentations that day. If you miss them, or if you want to have access to them all, you can buy the whole package for $97. That's pretty standard for summits.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, okay. It's free if you watch it those days. That it's awesome.
Okay. Great. Well, it's really exciting. You know, I think for many people who have had, you know, events that are normally live end up having to go on to the virtual situation, they've actually ended up doing okay because, like you said, so many more people can attend. You know, when the gala's just in New York, you're really only going to get people that can drive in and get to you. Whereas this way, you're really open to so many more people. So I think going forward, you know, once we get back to normal, if and when that happens, right. You know, there's an advantage to being live, but at the same time also Zooming. So you can kind of like do it both, you know, combine the live situation and have it recorded so that people who are out of town can participate even if they can't actually be there tasting the food. But that part you can't really replicate. I mean, that's one of the biggest highlights with your event when it's live is that you have a room filled with all these vendors serving up so many delicious vegan options. And that's always a treat for everyone who's vegan.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is if you buy a ticket at the $50 level or higher, you will get a box of chocolates from Lagusta's Luscious, which are the most amazing chocolates. And, you know, some people may think, oh, that's a little inconsistent with your mission, isn't it? But we, you know, one of the things about the gala and the fact that it's a food tasting event normally is that it's a balance of, you know, eating healthy most of the time and having the occasional special treat. Of course, the problem is in our society, people are eating special treats multiple times every day. So we don't mean that, but it's really a very special chocolate company and really nice little box of chocolates that people can get. And so we're, you know, excited that we're working with Lagusta's Luscious to offer that. So that's one of the benefits. If you look at the gala tickets link on greenapplesummit.org, you'll see the other benefits to other levels of tickets.
Nice. Very nice. So we're almost out of time. Is there anything else about your organization that I have not asked you about that you would like to share with my listeners?
I think that the main thing I want people to know is what we hear from our supporters. Our supporters say what they really like about us is here we are, this really small organization. We only have two full-time people and then a handful of part-time people. They cannot believe how much we've accomplished with such a small staff and such a small budget. So that when people make a donation to us, they know that it's having a real impact. It's not covering a lot of overhead or anything like that. You know, we've got a very low overhead rate. And so people can feel really good about donating to us. We're also the first and only one of two nonprofits in the country that focuses exclusively on getting plant-based food on school menus and plant-based nutrition education. So there's other groups that do that who do a lot of other things too, but we were really the first to do that, and it is our exclusive focus. And so we have a lot of expertise about how to work with schools, how to help schools, and we welcome hearing from school superintendents, school food service directors, school principals, teachers, parents and students. We help anybody who's interested in change. Last fall, one of the things we did that was really great was we presented to the New York State School Board Association at their statewide conference, and our room was packed. And as a result, we got two new partnerships with rural school districts. And we heard from many other people. And so, what a lot of schools don't realize. School decision makers, school board members, school superintendents don't know is that changing how they feed kids in schools and in the interview with the school principals from the vegetarian principals, they talk about this, is that the healthier a child is, the stronger their immune system is, the less days of school they're going to miss. The more they're in school, the healthier they are, the more they can focus and concentrate and pay attention, they do better. So they miss less school, they do better in school. And so it's really these indicators that are so important to the overall goal of the school, which is to have kids in school and learning, that a lot of times they think food and nutrition is just this other unrelated thing, and nothing could be further from the truth. This really impacts children's health and how well they can think and function. I think one of the worst travesties of public health is that there is a lot of kids actually allergic to milk. And don't know, I'm not talking about lactose intolerance. The majority of people in the world cannot digest dairy, and that is also a big problem. But there is a large number of children who are actually allergic to cow's milk. And one of the biggest symptoms from that is chronic constipation. And I cannot tell you how many people I know who found this out somehow, not because they usually hear from their doctor, but they found it out. They took their kids off dairy, and their chronic constipation reversed. These are kids who are being given increasing amounts of laxatives, kids who were miserable, kids who were not happy, who couldn't play and have fun because they were just constantly experiencing this problem, and so many people don't know it. So I will say that one of my favorite websites, which is nutritionfacts.org, Dr. Michael Greger, who's featured in our summit, nutritionfacts.org, and if you look up dairy and constipation, there's a great video, and it talks about all the research associated with that. It's really quite striking and quite amazing what happens when families learn this and take their kids off dairy and what a huge difference it makes in their lives. So that is just a little tidbit. But there's so many things you can learn when you learn about plant-based nutrition. Sometimes the ear infections or the constant colds reduce or stop. And so a lot of families have told me they're really struck by the changes in their family's health. And so we aim to not only help schools change how they feed kids, but really to educate the whole school community that is not just the students, but their parents, their families, the teachers, the administrators, the assistant teachers, the food right. service workers, everybody who has anything to do with the school and the school community.
Amy, thank you so much. So, you know, the work you're doing is so important. We are out of time, so I'm going to stop you there, but I just want to, again, thank you and encourage everybody who's listening to go on to the Coalition for Healthy School Foods website at healthyschoolfood.org and sign up to join their